I'm John Rothman in for Brex right here on AGO. 808-0810, the number. I want to deal with one of the most difficult stories and one that I want you to react to. And I particularly will be interested in African Americans' reaction. Yes, I will be. The federal government investigated the Baltimore Police Department following the Freddie Gray murder, or death, depending upon your point of view. And they came to a conclusion about Baltimore and its police department. Listen to this. Black people make up 63% of the population, but 84% of people stopped on the street by Baltimore police in those 5.5 years of research were black. Officers made 520 stops for every 1,000 black residents in Baltimore, but only 180 stops for every 1,000 white residents. Black residents were more likely to be stopped multiple times. Blacks accounted for 95% of those who were stopped more than 10 times. Despite the higher rate of stops, officers were less likely to find contraband during searches of blacks than others. For example, and I was fascinated, during traffic stops and searches, police found contraband in 3.9% of black vehicles compared to, you ready for this, 8.5% of others. And the report by the Justice Department says this difference suggests that Baltimore police are more suspicious and without justification of blacks than of people of other races. Do you hear that? They're more suspicious of blacks than of people of other races. Baltimore police arrested blacks for misdemeanor offenses at a disproportionate rate. For example, blacks accounted for 83% of 6,500 arrests for disorderly conduct. And I can go on and on. I mean, I've got a summary here that is absolutely astounding. Baltimore police charged 657 people with gaming or playing cards or dice. Essentially, everybody charged with that, 99% African American. The Baltimore Police Department used extreme tactics in black communities, dealing with misdemeanors. Drug usage data from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention shows that only one percentage point more blacks over the age of 12 use drugs than whites. But the rate at which blacks were arrested for drug possession far exceeded those statistics. The Baltimore Police Department made 254 drug arrests for every 1,000 blacks and only 52 drug arrests per 1,000 other races. In other words, so we're clear on this, blacks are five times more likely to be arrested for drug offenses. And the report concluded that black people were subjected to excessive force in 90% of instances of arrest. 808-0810. Zero tolerance policing was exercised in mostly black neighborhoods. 97 of the population in the Western District where Freddie Gray was detained are black. I mean, I can go on and on. So I want to ask a question. How do you react to this? What do you think about this? Is it true or false? The Washington Post headline is "The Justice Department's Stunning Report on the Baltimore Police Department." The Baltimore Police Department's legacy of zero tolerance enforcement, well, it really applied to blacks. And listen to this. The conclusion was that the Baltimore Police Department violated the First Amendment. The First Amendment by retaliating against individuals engaged in constitutionally protected activities. The report concluded that officers frequently detain and arrest members of the public for engaging in speech that officers perceive to be critical or disrespectful. And more important in a way, the Baltimore Police Department officers use force against members of the public who are engaged in protected speech. Fourth Amendment violation as well. 808-0810. I want you to know what came to mind. I do want you to know what came to mind. The National Advisory Commission on Civil Disorders, known as the Koerner Commission, named after Otto Koerner, the governor of Illinois, who was the chairman of an 11-member commission established by President Lyndon Johnson after the 1967 race riots. I have to tell you, I knew one member of this commission very well, Senator Ed Brooke of Massachusetts. Some of you know I've interviewed him before his death. I interviewed him on this program many times. There is one line from the Koerner Commission, and I want your reaction to it. That was 1968. This is 2016. The line, perhaps the most famous line of all from the Koerner Commission report. Our nation is moving toward two societies, one black, one white, separate and unequal. Doesn't the report issued today by the Justice Department prove that? Oh, there are other things. Baltimore cops coerced sex in exchange for immunity from arrest. I mean, I can go on and on. I could do this all night. 8080810. Are we two nations, one black, one white? I ask this question because the Wall Street Journal ran a story yesterday. And you know the headline? Listen to this. Listen to this. It would take 228 years for black families to amass wealth of white families. 228 years. So if you're an African-American, I want to know your reaction. But I'll tell you what, I want to know your reaction if you're a white American. Or if you're of another race. Because the critics of the Baltimore analysis by the Justice Department are already saying, it's because we have a black president. We have a black attorney general. We have a former black attorney general. That's why all this is happening. Do you agree with that? And how important is this? And one last thing, if I may. And then we'll go to the break and then we'll take your calls. The polls indicate that over 95% of African Americans are going to vote for Hillary Clinton. In the election of 1956, 60 years ago, 40% of African Americans voted for Dwight Eisenhower. They voted Republican. Here we are 60 years later, and the Republican Party will be lucky to get 5% of the African American vote, if that. 8080810. Let's talk about it. A lot of you jamming the lines. I'm glad we have a lot to talk about, but it is 8:15 exactly, and that means that Lee Graham is standing by to give us all the latest in traffic. Lee, have a very good report, I hope. Hope everything's clear on the roads. I'm John Rothman right here on KGO in for Drex. I want to remind you I'll be here tomorrow night as well. We're trying to put in context race in America. Let's go to Cade, calling from Santa Rosa. Cade, thank you for your patience. Welcome to KGO.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's more of a as a 26-year-old white male, my older brother who was adopted, Toby, is an African American, and he always encouraged me to look at things at the bigger picture. And I think that it's not so much a micro racial issue as it is a macro economic and educational issue where we perpetuate a system where there's kids getting a lesser education, so then they can't provide for themselves. So then they go out into the world and do it the ways that they can best. And that's outside the spectrum of what our government perceives as legal. So, or what is illegal. So they, then the cops in turn assume that they're going to be outside the spectrum of the law. So I think that we need to reevaluate our economic system and try to rebalance the distribution of wealth so that everybody has a fair chance at providing for themselves.
Well, I don't know if we can redistribute wealth, but I can tell you, when you read the statistic, that it would take 228 years for black families to amass the wealth of white families, you understand that there is an economic disparity. Let me ask you about the difference between you and your brother. When you're white, he's black. When you're behind the wheel of a car, is he more likely to be stopped, or are you more likely to be stopped?
Well, I can't say specifically because I don't have, you know, his say on this, but I would hope that we are both likely to get stopped, but I think that the interaction that the police officer or the intention that the police officer has going into the situation is one of less fear with a white male, just because of the common perceptions that the media constantly puts out there to scare us all.
Well, but it is true, and I think it's very important to point this out, that there is a disparity. Do we have any solution to this problem?
Well, as I said, I think that maybe the words redistribution of wealth aren't the best, but I think that we can come to a better policy or figure out a better system than capitalism, socialism. I think that we're in a new era of technology and enlightenment that we should be able to figure out a new system of economic distribution.
Cade, you and I are going to make a date. 5 years from now, I want you to call and let's see if it's happened. I appreciate the call. 808-0810 is the number right here on KGO. Let's go to David calling from Oakland. David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, sir. I think really, obviously there are so many things that is containing all of these situations that we have. I'm a black American male. I've been stopped by the cops several times. But at the end of the day, the way I conduct myself is what determines the outcome of that encounter. Number two.
Hold on. I want to describe to you something, just so you know this. Some years ago when my kids were learning how to drive, I was talking about it on the air. My kids are white. I got a call from a black man who said when he taught his kids to drive, he told them if he was stopped, if they were stopped by the police, keep both hands on the wheel, say yes, sir, and no, sir, make no quick moves, do whatever you're told. It's interesting. I didn't tell my kids any of that because, you know, my kids.
Well,
I mean, that's the difference, isn't it?
I understand that. You see, at the end of the day, this is what I see. You see all these YouTube videos. You see parents beating up a ref because the ref didn't put their child in a game. You see, people have just lost, you know, they have just lost reasoning on how to conduct themselves. It doesn't matter to me whether I'm talking to a police officer or a beggar on the street, how you conduct yourself. It doesn't matter whether he's a black officer or white officer. If you have respect for yourself, and like I said, I've been stopped several times. In some of those instances, they were my fault. In other instances, it was just the police checking. But at the end of the day, I want to make it home.
Yeah, I understand. David, I understand. There are many people who want to talk. I want to give somebody a chance. I can see from the notes here someone who disagrees with you, and I want to give them a shot before we have to break. I want to go to Tim calling from Fremont. Tim, how would you answer David from Oakland?
Well, thank you for taking my call. First of all, my experience and his experience would be totally different. I don't know what environment he grew up in, but I grew up in inner city New York on the Isle of Manhattan, came from an upper class black family. It doesn't matter how you comport yourself after they stop you. You have to look at the reason why they stopped you in the first place. I've been pulled over several times for varying reasons. All of the outcomes have been, I could say, less than ideal, but sometimes I've been ticketed, sometimes I've been targeted. Police officers' intent is more important than how you comport yourself, because if they approach you from a standpoint of denigrating you, treating you as less than human, treating you as less than deserving, then how could you expect anybody to undergo those situations over and over and over again, as you indicated through the study that multiple people have been stopped multiple times for no other reason than the fact that they're black. And if a police officer approaches me and he's got an attitude, I'm giving him attitude right back. I'm not a less than educated black person. I have every right to want to explore this life as any white person would, enjoying the freedoms and liberties that my education and economic status allow. So why should I be harassed just because of the color of my skin? I mean, Giuliani was credited for cleaning up the streets of New York, but the way black people were treated during his administration was deplorable. And I guarantee you, I'll bet a dime to my dollars for any of your listeners that if they look at this study and really drill down to the numbers that you were reciting, and I'm sure there's pages more.
It's shocking.
My stomach. It was a flashback. It took me back to my childhood and to the way I was treated. Now, in California, my experience has been completely different. I think there's a lot more diversity here. And because of the economic status and because people don't live in as many concentrated areas, except for maybe people in Oakland or some of the inner cities in Oakland and Los Angeles and some of the other areas. But, you know, California is a much more diverse area and people are spread out much more. But I would bet a dime to anybody's dollars that if you really polls your listeners, the only people that are going to be surprised by those statistics are your Caucasian listeners. Because anybody who's black, who's grown up in America, who's over the age of 20, 25 years of age, has probably experienced some form of racism from a police officer, particularly black males. I mean, we get pulled over because we have dreadlocks. We get pulled over because we looked at officers. I mean, you hear some of the most ridiculous excuses used for pulling people over. And they can find a reason. Your taillight was out. Your license is expired. You crossed the double yellow line. You crossed a white line. I mean, for any reason, they could pull you over. But if this is just an exercise for them to exert their authority over people, then it doesn't justify how you behave or how they behave.
Look, You're right. That's what the statistics say. And what is interesting is when I talk to African Americans, they understand the stats very clearly. When I talk to white Americans, they don't understand the stats because they don't live the experience. And so the Justice Department says, we're going into Baltimore and we're going to clean things up. So I have one last question for you, Tim, as got a lot of callers and got to squeeze a lot of people in. Do you think there is a way to correct the perceptions on the problem in this country?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
Tell me how.
I think a start would be to make police officers live in the communities that they serve in. If you want to serve in a black neighborhood, if you want to come in and take your dollars and go home at the end of the night, live in that community. Get to know the people in that community because they're not all criminals. All black men aren't thugs. Sure, there's a lot of disparity between the educational systems, the economic structures that we live under. But I think coming to a common understanding of that there are differences between how we're brought up, how we live, what our experiences are. And if we can learn to appreciate those differences and have to actually endure those differences as opposed to going home and you know, having these stories regaled about, you know, how you handled this thug or you dealt with this person or you beat up that person. I mean, because if you look at a lot of YouTube videos, you'll see these officers high-fiving each other and celebrating trashing people.
Tim,
and how many times do you have to be stepped on before you start to feel like,
right,
you know what? I'm going to start fighting back against my oppressor.
Tim, we're going to get a lot of comment from listeners about what you've said, and I want to thank you for your call and your candor. Do you agree or disagree with Tim? 800-808-10 is the number right here on KGO. When we come back after the requisite break, we're going to talk about African-American police officers who really have both feet on the ground but in two separate worlds. I'm John Rothman, sitting in for Drex. It's 8:30. And it's time now for Lee Graham to give us an update on all the latest in traffic. Lee, take it away. John Rothman in for Drex, 800-808-10, the number. Yes, this is a conversation. I want to hear what you have to say, and you want to tell me. We're going to go to the phones, but I want to just tell you this is another story that I've got here. Ernest Spradley, who was an African-American, says he chuckled when the South suburban white cop who pulled him over told him he was going 95 miles an hour down a main drag. I was like, officer, I'm in an 88 Honda Civic automatic, not even a stick. Clearly not amused, the officer said, so, mother, you know what? Are you trying to get smart with me? Before it was over, Spradley, a veteran Chicago cop, had to pull out his police ID, not so much to get out of a ticket, but so the officer knew he was armed and the situation didn't turn ugly. And the story says that many black officers say they run into similar problems. Let's go to Tony on line 5. Tony, welcome to KGO.
Yeah, hi, John. Let me preface this by saying that, as a black American, I grew up in East Palo Alto. I was born at Herrick in Oakland, but grew up until I was 12 before I moved to San Jose in East Palo Alto. My dad was a reserve sheriff for the San Mateo Police Department at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And to be quite frank with you, he never gave me the talk. He just didn't. You know, that's in those days, you know, it was a black, some Mexicans in that neighborhood and maybe one white person. But they used to call my dad a pig, you know, and they broke into the house. His gun got stolen. So, but, you know, he never gave me that talk. Maybe that's why I have respect for some officers. Guess what? My dad told me a lot of bad things that they used to do in those jails, and that's one reason why he just couldn't do it anymore. You know, he's an engineer. He was an engineer at HP by trade for over 30 years. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I was talking to an Indian lady today, and I told her, I go, you know, I feel really, it just really makes me upset because she's telling me, you know, she's an immigrant over here. She's going to school. She's getting her master, her boyfriend, you know, the whole thing. And I told her, you know what, to me it looks like a lot of Indian kids who, a lot of them are just as dark or darker than a lot of black kids, are living Martin Luther King's dream in regards to education and integrity, et cetera. And it just really upsets me. Now, I have relatives in Baltimore. Okay, I just came back from Virginia. My family grew tobacco in Virginia for a long time, over 400 years, okay? And my granddad has a lot of land out there, hundreds and hundreds of acres of land. You know, and each family member, we have lots, including my dad and myself. So we sustained ourselves back then as black people, okay? We grew corn and tobacco back then. That being said, a lot of our family moved out of Virginia into the Baltimore and surrounding areas of Washington, okay? Mm-hmm. And one of my cousins came to California because he got shot in Baltimore. I don't know. Baltimore is one of the most dangerous places. When I went there, and I've been to some bad places, John, it's horrible. It's horrible. It's dangerous.
Well, I can tell you, I went to school in Southern California, and I remember my friends out of Compton who had terrible problems. Yeah. And I can tell you, here in San Francisco, in the Bayview Hunters Point area, it's a whole different universe. So let me ask you, I got a lot of calls, Tony, and I appreciate what you're saying, but sure. If you had a solution here, what would it be?
The solution would be it's impulse control on both sides because, you know, a lot of black kids are killing each other for that and doing a lot of things because of impulse control. But guess what? The police are doing the same thing because of impulse control. They don't have any. Look, John, I've been hit by a cop. I've been stopped. I'm 56 now. They don't mess with me anymore, okay? I drive a nicer car. You know, I have my own home. You know, look, I'm just saying, from my experience, I give them a little bit more a benefit of the doubt because my dad was in that position, mm-hmm. All right? That's all I'm saying. And I just wish that black kids, I think the thing is, it's education, John. They really have to get an education in order to get ahead.
Do you think I'm wrong when I say that not only do African Americans need education, but white Americans need education? One of the things that I found quite remarkable, and if I don't have time to share with you all the emails I'm getting, but one of the things that interests me is that there is a completely different perception by African-Americans and white Americans. You know what it reminds me of? Back in the O.J. Simpson case, most African-Americans thought O.J. was innocent. Most white Americans thought O.J. was guilty, and we saw that clear racial divide. Listen, I appreciate the call, Tony. A good observation, education, but I say on both sides. Gerald, calling from Oakland. I think your comment's going to add a lot to this. Go right ahead.
So, I disagree with the brother here. I think it's part of it is around education, but it's not only us just educating ourselves. I mean, this has been going on for a long time. It originated with slave patrols, and now the police have been harassing, arresting, killing black people for a long time. It's been hundreds of years now. And until you know, you talked about a solution, until we tell the truth in our schools, until we tell the truth to the public, until we own up as America for what happened before and really tell it like it is, this is going to keep going on. Because I have white friends that I went to high school with. I went to predominantly white high school. However, I've grown up in both sides of the spectrum. And you're right. They have a different experience. You know why? Because anything that's said in our schools around slavery is about 5 minutes long. And so they don't get it. And I didn't even get it until I went to college and I got a chance to expand what I knew.
Yeah, I tell you, I think what you've said is very important. I'm a Jew. I had family in the Holocaust, and I'm very involved in Holocaust education because I'm directly impacted by that. For 26 years, I chaired the Holocaust Observance here in San Francisco. But if you were not a Jew or you didn't have the appropriate education, you don't come to grips with it. And I think it's the same thing if you're an African-American. By the way, it was the same thing when I talked to the people in Boston who were Irish, who remember the days of discrimination. Unless you can really understand it. You know what I remember slavery really making an impact in this country? Was in the 1970s when Roots was broadcast on television, granted a fictionalized account, but all of a sudden it made people think, like Schindler's List made people think, because we are removed. But I think you're right. We have to feel what the other person feels in order to really come to grips with it. Is that a fair statement?
I mean, that is a fair statement, and we need to own up to what happened, and it can't be of, hey, get over it, because nobody, I would never tell someone to get over it with the Holocaust. But however, we always hear get over slavery, get over what happened. You know what? Nobody has ever atoned for what happened and repaired the relationship. So that's why there's distrust in the black community with police, because that whole system has proven to be untrustworthy, as you can see today. And the main thing. So what they're going to do, is they're going to clean up. They're going to fire some people. They're going to implement some training. But what are they going to do to those families? What are they going to do to repair those families that went to jail, that had to pay fines, that have records, that can't vote, that can't really gain that upward mobility, that American dream that everybody else has? What are they going to do then? People that can't start businesses?
Listen, they can't pay fines. I had a ticket, and I had to go over to Oakland, and the judge was very nice, but, the room was packed. And a lot of the people, when they were given their fine, said, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I can't afford to pay it. And there was no sympathy, no direction, because there is an economic disparity.
And you know what happens when you can't pay that fine? It goes on your credit.
That's
right. So it means what? You pay a higher interest rate for everything that you have. So we're talking about economics here. And so you wonder why part of the reason we do have our own responsibility to take care of ourselves. However, we also have a system that works against us. And we are the only, in this manner, we are the only population of people that has in America that has a system constantly working against us, constantly working against our economic and our lives here. And it's really tough.
It
pisses me off.
Yep. And Gerald, you've summed it up, and I think you've said it very well. I've got to let you go because we've got to move on, but I want to thank you for your call, and I hope people are listening. That's what this debate, this discussion should be about. The statistics out of Baltimore from the Justice Department should shake us. 8080810. I'm John Ruffman, sitting in for Drex. I'll be back tomorrow night. I want to make an observation. We'll get as many calls as we can till the top of the hour. The observation is, people ask me who listens to KGO. Well, I'm going to tell you who listens to KGO. A lot of people of all different backgrounds, of all different opinions, of all different races and religions. Because what is talk radio for me? Why do I enjoy sitting behind this microphone? To hear the diversity of opinion. That's it. Lee, calling from Sacramento. Tell me what you think, Lee. Delighted to have you on the program.
Hi. You know, I just wanted to tell you a story. When I was married in 1988, and my ex-husband, he is Caucasian, and I am Black, he said to me in our first year of marriage in San Jose that he had never been stopped by the police so much since I've been married to you. And I thought, maybe not even for a traffic ticket, not even for, you know, telling you to slow down. He said, no, nothing like that. But I tried to count how many times that, you know, since then, how many times was I, you know, was I stopped and what were they for? And I, you know, it was, I went into a lane without signaling and stuff like that. And he said, none of that stuff ever happened to me.
Lee, your call is so important. Because what you have just done is to confirm what this report from Baltimore says, and frankly, what all of us have known for a long, long time. And I can't tell you how grateful I am for you talking about it.
Yeah, it's written a fast forward. I have a son and a daughter, and I was so nervous for my son, and he could never understand why I was nervous for my son when he got his license. But I was very nervous for him, and I had to sit down and tell, you know, and talk to my son about what to do and what not to do. And he had no clue as to why I was even saying these things. But I had to explain to him that, you know, I want my son. I'm not saying when I say this, I don't mean that, you know, I think that all police are, you know, they're going to kill him. But I wanted my son to be alive. I didn't want him doing something stupid. He's thinking that it was funny and it cost him his life.
Oh my. Oh my. Lee, thank you for your call, and I hope everybody is listening and understands. Unbelievable. 8080810. That is the number right here on KGO. Let's go to Michelle calling from Santa Cruz. Michelle, welcome to KGO.
Hi. Thank you for this talk, bringing it up and being so brave and open. I totally appreciate that.
Thank you.
I wanted to say, first of all, that your opening to this was talking about that commission and the words, we are headed towards a time. So I just wanted to start from there, way back then. And I want to say that there has never in the history of America been a good time for African Americans. There is not a time ever when there hasn't been two separate systems. It has always been that way. It's just that now with the advent of cell phones, white people are starting to see in pictures what we've been saying since whenever. Mm-hmm. It's always been like this.
You're absolutely always. Right. You're absolutely right.
You know,
That's the miracle.
I want to listen to me. I want to bank on also something that you were saying about the Holocaust. And I want to also preface that and add it with rape victims.
Yes.
Imagine if someone were to say to you, as a Jewish man, I don't believe that the Holocaust never happened. You guys are making it up. You're hysterical. Get over it. What? Now, we know it happened. We know it was an epic proportion of...
No, I understand. It's this question, and it's so emotional.
We've been saying that. We've been saying it. And you all have not believed us.
And
here's the thing is now, when you start to talk about it, you are, A, playing a race card. I still have to this day want to know what that means. Or you are being a racist by talking about it. Or get over it. Or you're making it up.
Well, that's the reason I wanted to raise this tonight. That's the reason why we're having the discussion. And believe me, you are right when you point out that the most famous passage of the Kerner Commission back in 1968 was this. Our nation is moving toward two societies, one black, one white, separate and unequal. I thank you for your call. A great call, an important call. I hope people are listening. I really do. Let's go to Ethan, calling from San Jose. Ethan, welcome to KGO.
Hi. I'd like to say that I agree with Michelle in her previous call, but I'd also like to say that there are slur words that are used for different races, but the only slur word that actually causes an impact towards white people is calling them racist.
Interesting observation. Very, very, very interesting observation.
If you call a white person racist when they express racist thoughts, they get really mad. Mm-hmm. And they try to dispute that, or they call you a reverse racist. And it's not something that they should react to. Like,
yep, you're right. And it's hard. And that's the reason why I wanted to have this discussion tonight, knowing that there was going to be a diversity of opinion, but also understanding how important it is. Ethan, thank you so much. Let me go to Rufus calling from Oakland. Rufus, only got about a minute and a half, but fire away. Are you with me, Rufus?
Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can, Rufus. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I just want to say to Paul, when I was in high school, my graduating class had 466 students, and I was the only black person in my class. And I was also in sports, track and field. A lot of time when we go out, with the white kids, I'd be in the car with them, and we would get stopped. And the police would come straight to me, and they would say, "Why you mess with him? This is our friend. He ain't done nothing." But it was seven times I'm in the car with them, and every time I'd be in the car with my white friend, we'd get stopped. And so, but there's some areas there that I found out how to deal with some of the police, because they say things a lot of time and do things to that they know they'll make it look like if they tell you to be quiet, you got to be quiet, because if you start talking, that's giving them a chance to arrest you or to do something to you, because I've had that happen.
That is exactly the point of the Baltimore report. That is exactly what the Baltimore report, the Justice Department says. You're spot on. I've only got about 30, 40 seconds, but I want to ask you, is there anything we can do to address this problem aside from talking about it like we are tonight?
Yes, I think the African-American community need a tight-knit community, just like I was a part of the Crenshaw Chamber in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And they made their own rules and regulations in the community that say any police come into the community have to abide by the rules of the community and know the community. And, you know, that is more to it than just that. But that is the way they have it now. So when the police come in, they know the people, most of the business and people in the community, don't act the same way they do in other parts of Los Angeles.
Well, that's exactly what we need to do here. We need to make the relationship between the police and the community, which one of our earlier callers pointed out. Again, I want to thank you, Rufus. Very revealing. You know, ladies and gentlemen, of course, this is a topic which we could talk about for hours. We do try to switch up and change topics. I want to do that in the next hour. And I want to shift to something else. Young people in America overwhelmingly support LGBT rights when it comes to policies on employment, health care, and adoption. I'm going to talk about that because that's another form of discrimination. If you're gay, I particularly want to know your reaction to this. 8080810, the number. I'm John Rothman, in for Drex, right here on KGO. San Francisco, San Jose, Oklahoma.